F4.
Number 26B.
So we epitomize really Christianity here as the glory that all is one through the fourfold calculus. Through that fourfold calculus, we are one family, one universal family of ideas. And that he shows in four different aspects. The very first one he shows is that we keep them through thine own name. I must read the text, 11. And now I am no more in the world. You know, he had said before, I have overcome the world. So he said, I'm no more in the world. But these are in the world. And I come to thee. I come to the Father. Holy Father. Now he starts again with the Father. You can see that he has the word sense in the focus. Holy Father, keep through thine own name those who thou hast given me, that they may be one as we are. See? So he shows here that the Word, the Father, is one with the Son. So Holy Father, keep through thine own name, through the Word, those who thou hast given me. He has given to the Son the whole Christianity, all the men, so that through that Christ they may be one, so that Christianity is a one Christianity, just as we are one, namely we, the Father and the Son is one. So he has a lot of relationships and says, because the Father is one with me and I'm one with all of them, therefore keep them so that they are kept as one, so that the one Christianity doesn't fall apart anymore, so that it doesn't, that the ideas don't get isolated anymore, so that there is a oneness between the Word and the Christ, bringing about a one Christianity, so that they may be one, just as we are one. Then he gives the touch of the Christ, of this oneness. 14, the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. He repeats again and says, you know, I talk about the Christianity that has nothing to do with the world. There's something to do with ideas, not of the world. So I pray that thou shouldst keep them from the evil. Can you hear the touch of the Christ? So I pray them that thou shalt keep them from evil. That the Christ is a protecting wall against all evil. That was the Christ. They are not of the world, therefore sanctify them through thy truth. Again you hear, really, the Christ sanctify them through what? Through which channel? Always when you hear through which channel, you know that is the Christ. It is in the cybernetic system, it is the input and then the processing. The processing is the Christ. Through what channel is the Word expressing itself? So sanctify them through thy truth. Typical tone of Christ that comes and sanctifies the whole universe. Thy Word is truth. Actually, it's in the Greek it says, thy Logos is truth. You can hear the Christ truth. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also may be sanctified through the truth. Can you see here? Constantly repeats in the Christ that he may keep that oneness in Christianity intact through the Christ. Through the Christ influence, through the sanctification of the Christ. So you have again that they are one on the ground, that the Christ is working it through the truth. Then we come to a touch of Christianity, so that all may be one in us. The verse 20 reads, neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word. So he says, my Christianity is bigger than Judaism. I pray also for all of them who believe in the Word. Not only for these here, not only for the disciples or for the Jews, for all, for them also, which shall believe on me through their Word, through the logos is in Greek, that they all be one. Can you see now he broadens out the whole concept so that the whole world may be one. Whole world may be one, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me. Now he goes back again and says, where is the authority for this oneness? Thou, Father, the Word, art in me, in the Son, in the Christ, and I in thee. Therefore we, the Christ, and the Son, and the Father are one, that they now come to Christianity, that they also may be one in us. Can you see? He establishes first the oneness between Father and Son, and between the Son and the Father, and says, if that is established as Emmanuel, then we are also one with them, because Christianity is the outcome of the Christ idea, so that also they may be one with us, with Christ and with the Word. Can you feel how he tries very hard? Because it's very hard to use language in order to bring out oneness, because in order to bring out one, you only need one term, one. That's an empty shell. He has to fill it in and say, what means that oneness? And from where do you get the authority that you can say we are all one? So that we are really one among us, but also one with the Christ and also one with the Father. Can you see, it's always oneness in a relationship brought out. Yes. So that it's an important one, this, you see, that they all be one. That they all may be one. Christianity, huh? How? Because of what? It's still 21, I repeat. As thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee. That's a relationship between Word and Christ. That they, Christianity, also may be one in us, in the Christ and in the Father. So that there is oneness of Word, Christ, and Christianity. So it brings out this infinite one as the only one, as life and truth and love. That's the person of God. One ideal reflected in infinite ideas, so that we are this idea and know, really, from where we come and where we go. 22, and the glory, it comes back that that is a glory, and the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them. Can you see, the Christ always hands it down. He takes it from the Father, takes it for himself, and then hands it down to Christianity, to them, to everybody, to the universe, with all Christianity sense. So the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them. For what purpose? That they may be one. You see, always the pinnacle is that they may be one, that there is only one Christianity. Even as we are one, even as the Father and the Son is one. So in the same way, all are one, because they all have a principle, they all have a Christ, and therefore they all have the same Father and the same Christ, and therefore they must be one. On that basis we have a true Christianity. So when we started out this week with the proposition that we are facing a world that is at the brink of disaster, therefore a counterfeit of true Christianity, a counterfeit of the glory of the Christianity, we can see that he gives us a way out, that he gives us the method how to work it out. And therefore, we can be quite sure until mankind does not arrive at this insight and try to work it out through material ways and means that they can't do it. That they can't do it. It's not possible. Because it's a science of spirit and the oneness is always in spirit. You can't have a material oneness because matter means limitation. It implies limitation. Every material object is limited. Limited in place, limited in time, limited in space, limited in energy. It's all limitation. And to break out of that limitation, he can see only one thing, that we take in the divine infinite calculus. Then he has a little touch with half a verse of science, and that the world may know. That the world may know. Now suddenly the world knows. Up to this time he has always said, the world doesn't know the Father. The world doesn't know the Christ. So that the world couldn't know Christianity either. And now suddenly he says, that the world may know that thou hast sent me and hast loved them as thou hast loved me. Can you see how he brings out suddenly that there is just one realm of love, just one realm of love, and the world will know it. That's the point that impresses me very much, that now he doesn't say the world is ignorant of the God, like Isaiah started the story. The world does not know God. Israel does not know God. So we feel here that he gives really the recipe, so to say, for healing the nations, through that fourfold calculus, so that the world finally will have to accept the signs of God. We can be quite sure. We don't know how long it takes. That we don't know. Jesus didn't know how long it would take until he would send the Comforter. He never said that. He never said, in so and so many centuries I will send the Comforter. He only said, I go away so that I can send you the Comforter. And the Comforter will come and lead you into all truth. And here we are in that wonderful age. Thank God we are not living in the 8th century or in the 13th century. We are living in a wonderful age where, in a progressive way, we are in infinite progression, not in infinite progress, which is slow, but in infinite progression, you know, with exponential growth, not with a linear growth. Progression is an exponential growth. You know what I mean with exponential growth? You see, from your side, it isn't a growth that starts here, goes slowly up like this. That's growth, that's progress. Exponential growth is what you see when you have a curve like this, starting here like that. That's exponential. That's what happened in the world today. You can look at practically everything in the world, and you see that everything in the world shows now typically that exponential growth, because at the beginning one can hardly see it, because it still goes somehow flat, and you can't quite see the exponential growth until you reach a certain maximum, and then suddenly it goes up right straight up. Take, for instance, the population growth. That population, say, going back to 5, 6, 7,000 years back, it was just as if it was always the same amount of people that were, and then it began to grow and grow and to double and double, and it is like this today. And we have witnessed in our age a population growth that is much more than all the many thousand years before. See, and so you have the same thing. Today live more scientists in the world, in the discipline, more scientists than ever before together. And things like that. You can see that exponential growth everywhere, and also in the spiritual. Therefore, it's quite reasonable to think that also in the spiritual, we can witness this exponential growth, and should really be open for that, that it comes, certainly that curve, you know, suddenly comes to a point where when it doubles, it goes right out like that. Yes. So, gosh, I didn't want to tell you that, but still, you see, he says, the world will know. Now, up to this time, the world did not know. But the Comforter has within itself such a Christ power that the world can't help to give in at one moment and to accept the signs of spirit. And if we look into the world, into the various disciplines in science, we begin to see that turning point. We begin to see that they have come to some kind of a break, to some kind of a limit, where they can't go further, except they begin to speculate on metaphysical ideas, and perhaps afterwards on spiritual ideas. As I said, they begin to see that the whole drive behind evolution in every way is really love, as love, that one love that wants to bring out the unity of mankind. That this is the driving element behind what is happening right today. They begin to see that the old concept of science doesn't anymore suffice. Can you say suffice is not enough? That it is not satisfactory. That we have been on the wrong track. You know, some go even so far as to say the biggest catastrophe that the world has ever experienced was the growth of science, the growth of natural science. They have brought us to the brim of self-destruction. People without the material science, people would not have been brought to that point of self-destruction. But we are right at that point where we are going to say, let's go on in the material world so that we can destroy ourselves completely. And that is what the thinkers of today fear. So, Kali, he says that even the world may know that thou hast sent me and hast loved them, and thou hast loved me. It's a terrific view and promise that we have here. So he also gives now, after that, another last point of science. So we had in the world, we had the structure of the four levels of science. And in the Christ, we had the fourfold translation of the Christ and manifestation. Then in Christianity, we had the fourfold Christianity, so that the Christianity becomes one and one and one. And so that actually that Christianity comes to the point where the world will accept true Christianity, spiritual Christianity. They will know that the Father lives and the Father has sent the Christ. They will accept the signs of Christ, the Christ science, as Mrs. Eddy calls it. And now we come to the last little bit, which naturally must be the climax of it, in which, as I see it, he just shows the oneness of being, so that everything is one. I have given an epitome, the knowledge of the glory of the one love before the foundation of the world. He wants to show now that being, that Logos was before the foundation of the world, that he brings everything back to that point where being was just one being and nothing else, so that he could see that being is only its own infinite being. 24, in chapter 17, it says, Father, I will that they also, whom thou hast given me, be with me where I am. He says, all will become to that point of consciousness where I am, to the I am consciousness. That, he says, that's what really is the purpose for which I have been sent, that they may behold my glory. That they, you see, that the whole world may behold really my glory, which thou hast given me, which thou hast given me, the glory of God that hast given me, for thou lovest me before the foundation of the world. Can you see how it goes right back to that one love which existed before the foundation of the world? The Greek says something a little bit different, that foundation is apparently not a good translation, that the Greek means here before the disruption and ruin of the world. Disruption and ruin of the world. So, glorify me with thy glory which I had before the foundation of the world. You know how he said before, when we had chapter 17:5, also in the word, he only said, glorify thou me with the glory which I had with thee before the world was. And now he said, with the glory which I have before the foundation of the world. Even before the foundation of the world. He doesn't want to accept any world. He only accepts the one being. There is only the infinite one. And could see that that is the only thing that exists in reality, and everything else is just a translation right down to where we are. 25, O righteous Father, the world has not known thee. Now he says, the world has not known thee up to now. But I have known thee. Now he says, I have known thee. He had the science of the Christ. He knew God, and he was sure that he knew God. And these have known that thou hast sent me. They know that I know God. They know that thou hast sent me. They know that I have the answer in the palm of my hand. They know that I have the science of the Christ. They know it. And I have declared, I have interpreted, I have declared unto them thy name. I have given them a clear interpretation of the infinite one. I've interpreted to you, and will declare it again, that the love wherewith thou hast loved me may be also be in them, and I in them. So it takes them also way back to that glory which he had before the world was before the foundation of the world, before the destruction or ruin of the world, right back into the one being. He tries hard, very hard, you can see, to bring out that oneness. And if we analyze that verse 26, we can see that in that text he has again the four embedded in it in order to show these four make up the one, the only one. So he said, I repeat again, and I have declared unto them thy name. Declare means interpret to them thy name, and I have interpreted to them the divine principle. And I will declare it, as if he would say, I do it again. What is that principle, that thy name? And he says, that the love wherewith thou, and he goes right back to the Father, to the world, thou hast loved me. See, you have given me that love. So you had the Christ, that thou, the Father, had the Christ, he had loved me, hath loved me. Maybe also in them, also in Christianity, that same love, God is love, God loved the Christ, has given the love to the Christ, and the Christ has given that love to all, so that there is just one love, and I in them. What more can you have? And I in them. Just one tone of, one great tone of love. And that is the end of the third part. He has lifted up, really, the people right to that point. You know, that reminds me of something you have also in my booklet on the development of the Christian Science idea and practice, where Mrs. Eddy once asked the students how they would treat a person so that they would have instantaneous healing. And the student answered and said, I would realize the presence of love. Very nice. Huh? I would realize the presence of love. Mrs. Eddy listened very patiently. Then she said, you have answered very well. Very well indeed. But, comes the but you don't get quite close enough. See, here John went quite close enough. She said, but you don't get quite close enough. Now let me tell you how I would heal instantaneously. It is not so much to realize the presence of love, but love. You see, realizing the presence of love is still an activity that we entertain. And realize that God is love and the only love and one love. It's not yet the highest attitude, but she said, love. Love is a factor in being, and you don't have to realize it. It's love, and love takes care of itself. So it's a fact in being. Always I tell you that because I want the thought to get away of loving love, of loving God, of loving the neighbor, of loving men. That's all right, that's better than hating them. But yes, certainly. But what science really wants to teach, you see, is that which was before the world. We realize love, well, we, who is we? That's only something that happened only about 2 or 3 thousand million years ago. But the world is much older. See, that is billions, 50 billions, 20 billions here. And he said, there existed the Logos before the world was established, before the foundation of the world. So go back to the being there is, and that's love that does it. Okay? Tomorrow we go on.